Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me is my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Thursday, December 12th, and we are back at you with episode 38. And a little bit of backstory here, James. I actually went back and listened to some of our episodes, which I typically don't do. I don't know if that's good or bad. But I figure, like, I'm here for the making of it, so why do I have to go listen to it again and, like, inflate our stats and all that? I sincerely apologize for my mic quality, guys. I'm recording out the internal mic of my computer, and, boy, I heard it for the first time the other day. It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not the best, but you know what? Looking at the calendar, we have, like, another couple weeks. We have another, like, week and a half of really awful internet connection. Time difference.
That's the biggest thing, I think, is the time difference. We've been over that in length, though. Let's get into the Red Sox, who once again prove us wrong on not making any moves. I guess it wasn't really the Red Sox, though, was it? Free agent moves?
No, free agent moves have been popping this week, though. The hot stove is cooking.
Yeah, I was completely wrong that the big deals would go down after Christmas because some people are getting paid, but we will get down to that in a second. Most recent news, this just happened, I found out 3 hours ago, I think. So within the last couple of hours, Rick Porcello has signed a one-year, $10 million deal with the New York Mets. Not hyped about it. He hasn't played great for the Red Sox. He did have one Cy Young season that was either, was it 2016 maybe, or 2014? I kind of forget.
I think it was between the 2013 and 2018 World Series, somewhere in there.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, it was in the last 4 years, because the Red Sox
it was pretty recent,
4 years now. So he will leave somewhat of a hole in our already not great pitching rotation. What could also possibly leave another hole is, James, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, so I saw this on, I believe it's Twitter this morning. Both LA teams, being the Dodgers and the Angels, are supposedly pursuing David Price. He does have some connections to each team. The Angels, I forget what his connections exactly are, but he's had been coached by people in the same coaching tree or by these people directly in his time with the Tampa Bay Rays. So he has some connections to LA, and they're both reportedly pursuing him. But due to the move of Anthony Rendon to the Angels, which was, I believe, a 7-year $245 million, roughly, deal that just went down yesterday. I'm assuming that the Angels are probably backing off a little bit because they have a lot of big contracts on the table now, with Mike Trout signing the record-breaking extension last season for $430 million. Rendon going there for 7 years, $245. So it's a lot of money on the table. I'll be surprised if they can make a really good shot at David Price considering what we pay him now. But just thought I'd bring it up because that is like the biggest rumor surrounding the rest of our pitching staff.
And that would be a trade deal, correct? Price is on the currently on the payroll?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that would be a decent way to offload some cap space. Yeah. I think Price has some pretty high potential. He just hasn't... He's shown it at times throughout the last couple of years, but nothing... He hasn't had, like, a Cy Young season or anything.
No, and I think the biggest, like... the thing that I remember the most, at least from, like, the recent time with David Price, was him kind of exercising his demons in the 2018 World Series run, where, you know, they talk about he's never had a good playoff game, he's 0-whatever in playoffs, and then he just shut everyone up and he pitched lights out for two or three games. And that, if he can pitch like that on a, you know, nightly basis, that's what we need from him. That's what we're paying him for, and unfortunately we haven't seen a whole lot of that. And also dealing with injury, just like Chris Sale, for the last little bit of this season. But if you want to cover probably the biggest contract that's gone down, I believe it happened yesterday. If you want to talk about that a little bit.
So this isn't directly related to the Reds. Indirectly related to the Red Sox, kind of, because it involves our arch enemies, the New York. They did what New York does, and they paid their athletes. They just signed Garrett Cole to a 9-year, $324 million deal, which is, one, absurd, just absolutely insane, and, you know, a little disheartening that the Red Sox now have to face this guy for, I don't know, how many games do they play the Yankees in a season? 15, 20?
At least, yeah. I mean, a decent amount of games.
So, you're talking about three or four times a year possibly having to face this guy. Yeah, and for the next 9 years, they don't offload him. So, Yankees making moves, and the Red Sox will get there eventually. I don't want to say a time frame when, because I've been wrong as to everything up to this point. I do have just kind of like a fun fact here before we move on. But the agent that negotiated Gerrit Cole's deal,
it's also Scott Boris.
Yeah, it's Scott Boris. He negotiated Rendon's deal, Strasburg's deal, and just recently Moustakas' deal for a total of $878 million between those four players. So if you want to do some quick math here, James, and pull up your calculator,
I believe I
read somewhere that the average is 5%. So if you want to multiply $878 million times 0.05, you'd get an idea of what this agent has made in the last 5 days, week.
It's coming out to about $44 million.
Yeah, so not only did these players got paid, the agents got paid this one agent has gotten paid as well, and he still has some pretty big clients on the table from what I've heard.
I think
so.
He still has Ryu, who's with, is he with the Dodgers still?
And he just Ryu, Castellanos.
Welcome to the show where we don't know the rest of the people who are in this MLB. Quickly, before we do want to move out of the Red Sox in just a minute here. So the 9-year, $324 million deal with Cole breaks down to $36 million a year average annual value. And I believe that is the highest of any MLB player, even breaking, you know, Trout's per year salary. And looking at it, I did a little bit of math out here, which is surprising given what we do on this show. So we have Chris Sale locked up at $145 million for 5 years. That's $29 million AAV. And we have David Price at $217 million for 7 years. We signed that, I believe, 2 or 3 years ago. And that's $31 million a year. So I want to quickly pose the question, do you think we're getting these guys kind of for a steal, considering we're paying $7 and $5 million less a year, respectively, for Chris Sale and David Price?
I think we are if they live up to their potential. Obviously, right now it seems like we kind of got, I don't want to say screwed over, but we didn't get our money's worth with Chris Sale this season. Again, battling injury, not the greatest showing at times. Same thing with David Price. Did he battle injury this year? I kind of forget.
Towards the end of the year, and Price were both out of the rotation.
But I mean, you're talking about these are long-term deals. Sale still has 4 more years because he signed an extension at the beginning of the year, and David Price probably has 4 or 5 more years. So I mean, if you turn it around and they pitch what their potential is, literally just what we were talking about with David Price, then yeah, this is an absolute steal because you have two guys that maybe aren't exactly on level with Gerrit Cole, although I'd argue Chris Sale is one of the best pitchers in the MLB when he's at his best. So you're talking two guys who are almost right up there with Cole for, you know, what is that? It's $12 million less combined. So, or not combined, sorry. $5 million and $7 million respectively, like you said, less than Cole.
Yeah, I think obviously Gerrit Cole had an incredible season and it came at the right time for him when the next year he's a free agent, he's going to get paid, and he did just that. But I do think that at their best, Gerrit Cole, or rather Chris Sale and David Price, are pitching as well as Gerrit Cole is. I think they have the ability to pitch as well. They just haven't been as consistent, at least this year. I know Sale had some issues with injury last year, but still had close to a Cy Young season pitching way less than anyone else, which is basically why he didn't get into the running for it. But I think both of these guys, the ceiling for their potential is just as high as Gerrit Cole. It's just going to come down to who pitches more consistently, and right now that's been Gerrit Cole. Not to say that these guys can't do it, though.
I think that pretty much wraps up baseball. Actually, a little bit of news to talk about, even if we did some horrible math there. Let's get on into the Celtics, who are starting to pick it back up a little bit after a little slump, sitting at third in the East behind Milwaukee and, so you believe it, Miami.
Yeah.
Did not think I'd be saying that at the beginning of the season.
No.
I still don't have much to say. Just it's literally impossible for me to catch basketball games.
Celtics just last night had a close game against Indiana, and probably the biggest headline from that game is Gordon Hayward leaving the game in the fourth quarter after getting a hand to the nose. Pretty tough hit he took. It's believed
just two games back.
Yeah, I mean, it's this man can.
Sorry, I cut you off with the
catch
prognosis
a break. This poor guy, but it's believed to not be serious. He does not believe he has a broken nose or a concussion, which is the best news, I guess, you can get out of that scenario. But it's just one of those things where you hope that Gordon Hayward can stay healthy because he's played so well this season when we have seen him.
And even coming back off that, did he break his wrist or his hand?
His hand.
Or his ankle. It wasn't, ankles last year. Jeez.
Ankle was 2 years
mixing
before,
up everything. Yeah, so just coming off the hand injury, and he great showing in, or I shouldn't say great, promising showing in Cleveland the other night, and then to have this happen in Indiana is just, is Gordon Hayward injury prone? Is that it?
It's not even that he's injury prone. He's just so unlucky, it seems like. I don't want to say he's injury prone, because if you look at his time in Utah, I can't speak much to it because I didn't watch Utah back then, or now for that matter, but I don't... Like he was playing
Utah basketball now.
He was playing incredibly the season, you know, leading up to his free agency, and I don't think he dealt with a lot of injury, but that could be very, very wrong because I didn't know close to anything about Gordon Hayward before this or before he came to the Celtics.
Yeah, and I mean before the game to Indiana, a nice little 4-game win streak against you know, beating Miami, beating Denver, so two decent looking teams, and then beating New York and Cleveland, two not so strong teams. We can get into a little more speculation, kind of trade. It is rumored that Kevin Love wants off the Cavs, or the Cavs want to get rid of Kevin Love. And I did see some tweet like that someone wanted him in Boston. So it got me thinking, you know, we are missing that big man. We lost Horford to the Sixers this year. Is Kevin Love a guy you would consider trading for, or are you happy with where we're at? Do you think we need someone of that caliber, or I don't know, any number of questions? Basically, do you think it's worth pursuing Kevin Love?
I think it's worth like looking into what you need to give up to get him. And first of all, I don't blame him for wanting out of Cleveland. Jeez, that place has been a train wreck since LeBron left. And frankly, I never liked them since LeBron was there. So I have to look past this whole despise I have towards the entire Cleveland organization. But I do think, if you look at it from a talent basis, he's a good player. He's a decent big man. He has the ability to shoot the ball, which is something that I think is really important in today's game, where you see, you know, you see big men stretching the court. You see, you can have your big man on the outside, and, you know, they have to take him seriously. They have to guard him on the outside. Otherwise, he's going to make three-pointers. He's going to make shots, which is very different than, you know, what you think the big man is for. But I think it's worth looking into. I don't think I'm willing to give up any number of pieces to get him. I think I'm very comfortable with where the Celtics roster is at right now. And I don't know exactly how, you know, the trade deadline works in the NBA, so I can't speak to it too much, but I think it's worth keeping in the back of your mind, seeing how the Celtics do with where they're at. And then if you think this is one of those pieces where you bring him on for 1 year halfway through and he's kind of just a piece to get you through the playoffs, and then
he's
you dump
rental.
Him.
An he's expensive a rental. Yeah. Rental.
He's a 1 year, you know,
expensive rental.
This is our run for the championship. So, you know, you take that hit now. If you think you can, you know, if you think you bring him on and you can win an NBA championship, I say yes. But I think that, you know, that's up to Brad Stevens and the whole Celtics organization.
I think it comes down to, and I can't speak to much of Kevin Love's game except that he is a shooter, or he can shoot the ball, like you were saying. I think it comes down to, can he guard the Giannis's? Can he guard the Joel Embiid's? Can he guard the other dynamic and, I mean, Giannis being probably the best player in the NBA still at the current moment. Can he guard those type of guys? That's what's going to, I think, help us the most. The Celtics have clearly shown their shooting abilities this year with, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown picking up a lot of points. So I think it comes down to if he's worth it on the defensive end of the court.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think when you look at, you know, players like you mentioned, Giannis, Joel Embiid, I almost look at it not as, you know, can you guard this man, but it's just like, slowing the bleed. You know they're going to be
down.
Yeah. You know they're going to be incredible no matter what. Maybe they have an off night here or there, but they're going to be great. It's just how much can you slow them down? Exactly. And I think that once again, it just comes down to if you believe that Kevin Love elevates your team's potential to make it to a championship, Because at the end of the day, that's the goal of every basketball team, is to win the NBA championship. If you think the talent that he brings to your team can get you to the NBA championship, then I say yes. But I do agree that defensively, you know, we have guys like Marcus Smart who can, they're great at defending guards, but you put him up against a guy like Giannis and it's just size at that point. So if you think you can at least get a decent, you know, someone decent on defense, but if you're just going to blow right by him, what's the point?
Yeah, I completely agree. Just, you know, how much is it going to help type of thing. The Celtics play the Philadelphia 76ers tonight, so we won't be bringing you much on that game because it'll be happening after we record. And they have a weird 5 days off before they pick up an away game against Dallas and then back home on next Friday against Detroit. We ready to flip it to the other half of the TD Garden in the Boston Bruins?
I am, in fact. And less exciting news on this front, with the Bruins sitting at 26-6 with four straight losses. The first being an OT at Chicago, the next being against the Avalanche, then the Senators, who are trash, and we somehow lost to them. And then last night being the Washington Capitals in a close game, but it's weird. The Bruins, they hit these swings where they're winning, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row. And then they just, boom, drop 4 to, you know, the Senators, who aren't a great team. Teams that you think they should be winning against. But, I mean, I believe this Bruins team. I've mentioned this at length on the podcast before. I've watched much more of the Bruins than I have the Celtics. And just coincidentally, last night, tonight, they both play at the same time. I won't be able to watch either of them tonight because I have an exam. But I love watching this team. They're so fun, and I mean, in most of these games, it never really seems like they're out of it, which I really, really enjoy. But I think it's going to be about, can you win, you know, can you go on runs where you're winning, you know, a bunch of games and lose one or two? Because if you look at this in a playoff scenario, you win 5 straight, you get through the first series, but you lose 4 straight, you're out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this 4-game losing streak isn't a huge deal. You know, one was an OT loss, so we did pick up a point there against Chicago. But you're playing, you know, last night against the Capitals was a tough one, but the Capitals are a good team. Like, they're the only team ahead of us in the East. And, I mean, you're still sitting second in the East, one of the top teams in the entire league. Actually, the second team in the entire league. So, to me, they're still sitting fine. You're gonna go on these skids or whatever it happens. I think the potential of this team is off the charts. As we're looking at another Stanley Cup run here, I think. That being said, Patrice Bergeron is finally back, and he scored one goal in his, how many games has he been back? Two.
He's been back two. So he scored one in his return. He scored one last night, but it actually got revoked after review. Someone was offsides, and it just seems like every time there's a review, it's always against the Bruins, and it always comes back.
That was to go up 2-0, right?
That was to go up 2-0, and then Bruins.
Yeah, because I look at my notifications in the morning, and it was like 1-0 Bruins, 2-0 Bruins, and then I get the notification like first period ends 1-0 Bruins. So I'm like,
yeah,
either like I'm getting mistake notifications or they're reviewing goals, and that just, it's part of hockey with all the new technology and everything now.
And I do agree that more times than not, the review, as much as you hate to see it when it's your team that kind of gets, I don't want to say screwed over, but, you know, gets, you know, the goal taken away from them, the penalty taken away from them, whatever, because of review, more times than not, the review is correct. And the review makes the game more fair in a sense, and I will talk at length about officiating in about 10 minutes when we get into the Patriots. But
10 minutes, you want to do it now? I was just gonna say, you want to talk about what you want to talk about.
Well, I'm gonna go on a rant, so it's just at what point you want me to get into that. But going back to hockey though, glad to see Patrice Bergeron back. He's obviously producing, putting two in the net, and the goal that he did get, if you look aside from the offsides play, they controlled the zone for another 15-20 seconds after the penalty should have been called, and it was just a scrappy goal. You know, they shoot it around, gets a rebound, puts it off the goalie, kind of tries to shove it in, misses, gets a rebound again and just lifts it over his pad and right in. And it was a good scrappy goal. He kept fighting for it, didn't give up on the play, and that's what you like to see. So it was a great effort despite it being revoked. But I do agree that you're going to have a losing streak here and there, and you're probably going to see the Bruins playing much more consistent hockey towards the end of the season. But it's one of those things where, like you said, we're still in first in the Atlantic Division, I believe. I'll check if that's actually right.
I
believe that is right. You know, second in the East, second in the NHL. So I'm not too concerned on that front. Obviously, they're still having an incredible season.
Yeah.
I just like to see...
In first, by lengths in the Atlantic.
A little bit more consistent. But I think that's, you know, one of those things that will come with time.
That being said, going forward, just a quick look. Another back-to-back game for the Bruins away this time. Or away again, rather. Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. Florida Panthers on, Saturday. And then the LA Kings on Tuesday. So... You know, a four-game homestand coming up after the game on Friday, so potential to turn around here against some decent teams. I'll shut up. And actually, you know, no, let me say some stuff first. We're gonna get into the Patriots.
Yeah, I was gonna get that.
We're gonna get into the Patriots. James, you went off last week, so I feel like I don't want to let you do it again. But I'm afraid of how mad you're gonna get here because. I couldn't watch this game. It was at the correct time for me to watch, but my internet here was so bad I couldn't stream it.
Yeah, it's frustrating having to rely on an internet connection to watch anything here because we don't have cable or anything, so it's all based on streaming. So
get game notifications, basically. Obviously, a rough loss that ended a 20-plus game win streak at home for the Patriots, including the postseason. Should the Patriots have won? Maybe. I will let you explain that because you do have the better grasp on that, and then we can kind of... I'm limiting you to 3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay? Okay, and is this just about the refs or is this about the whole game? Just to clarify.
Okay, no, actually, go over the game.
So I will go over the game, and I will be very mildly tempered about that. So... Okay. A 23-16 loss, unfortunate. So, to give some context here, I had my first exam, week or whatever, from 2 to 5 on Sunday. And if you know, the Patriots game was at 4:30. So I'm like, all right, either I'm hoping I can get through my exam and watch the whole Patriots game, or I'll just pick it up whenever I get off. Of course,
Just answer C on every question.
It was an account. It was all long response. No way I was getting through this thing. So it took me all 3 hours. That was whatever. Look at my phone the second I get out, and it's 7-3 Patriots. It's like, all right, I feel good. And I have to walk 10 minutes back to my dorm from where I took my exam. I walk back. It is suddenly 10-7 Chiefs. I'm like, okay, not too worried about it. And if you look at the box score here, the Chiefs put up 17 in the second quarter.
Apparently, and they're a second quarter team. I did hear that part of the announcement. They were saying like they put up like 28 in a couple games ago against someone.
I think they have the highest amount of points scored in the second quarter. And the Patriots, I mean, after that, it was just they couldn't dig themselves out of that hole, putting up 6 and 3 in the last two quarters. Like, I talked about this at length with, you know, the Patriots need to be scoring more points. Their defense, I don't want to say it doesn't look as good as it did in the first couple games. I think it was a combination of them playing worse teams, but also their defense playing just incredibly for a couple of games there. And that's
they did pick off Mahomes in their first drive, the Chiefs' first drive.
Yeah, and if you look at it, we held the run game to nothing in this. But it was, I mean, if you talk about a Pat Mahomes offense, you're not talking about the run game.
No. So, I mean, it's a win in itself to hold Patrick Mahomes to, 23 points?
Yeah, I mean, 23 points. And Patrick Mahomes, 283 yards, a touchdown, and an INT. That's nothing for a player of his caliber. But one of those things where it just looked like the Patriots offense couldn't get rolling. And then the Patriots get into a little bit of a drive. They go down, you know, they go down by a score. And then immediately Brady throws an INT. And I don't know if that's an issue with, he didn't throw it to the correct place. He just had a bad throw. The receiver wasn't wherever it was supposed to be. If you watch it, the defense, the guy in defense was so out of place on where he was supposed to be. He just ends up where the ball is, gets the INT. But, you know, you can make excuses here and there. But Brady, 169 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 INT. James White going 1-for-1 with a 35-yard pass. But, I mean, you talk about what, the 1 touchdown they score, was that on a flea flicker? Like, they're just resorting to trickery at this point to do anything. And if you look at it, the numbers just aren't there. The rushing game is still barely seeing any production. The receiving game, you know, Julian Edelman, obviously your number one receiver with 8 receptions, 95 yards and a touchdown. But if you go down the list from there, The next person, 35 yards, 27 yards, 14 yards, 13 yards. I mean, it's just it's little production. And it's frustrating to watch that as a team that's historically had a very good offense. And we've talked at length about the lack of weapons, this, that, the other thing. So I won't really get into that. But it's one of those games where if you look at the three tests that the Patriots have had this season, they've lost all three of them. So it's not very comforting as a fan looking at, you know, the three best teams we've played, we've lost to. And three of those teams we will are in the AFC and we will likely see in the playoffs. And this is a game where now Buffalo's sitting one game out of the AFC, and this weekend's game means a whole lot more than it did before this, where the Bills win this game, you're looking at the Patriots going into the playoffs as a wild card team. So the Patriots,
heck, you're talking about when do we play the Bills? Week 16?
Week 16, rather. I apologize. I did say next.
We're playing Cincinnati this week, right?
Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of controversy surrounding that.
I don't even want to talk about that because
it's independent from the coaching. So I don't know what else to get into.
No,
let's not really bring that.
I don't even want to acknowledge that.
That's all I'm going to say. You're
talking about that Week 16 Bills matchup.
I mean, that's
for the AFC East essentially.
Exactly, and I mean, you look at
when was the last time the Patriots have been in this position, giving up the division?
I can't.
It hasn't been for the last 5 years, that's for sure.
At least because that's when I've been paying the most attention to football. But
and I know we've won the AFC for the last 10 or whatever, 10 straight, 12 or whatever. But for sure, the last five have not even been close.
I mean, it's not like the Bills have been a terrible team all of these years, but I mean, giving the Patriots a true run for their money where it comes down to a Week 16-17 matchup, like, that is not very common. And I wouldn't say I'm panicked. It's just a strange feeling for a team that's been so dominant to have a season where they, you know, struggle, I guess, is a way to put it. So I'm not concerned, but it means that game means a lot more. And I mean, maybe the Bills lose this week. The Patriots win against the Bengals. Hopefully we can take that for a given.
We looked at this. Don't the Bills, who did the Bills play this week? We just looked at this last week.
Oh, I have
not someone great. You can look that up while I, because we're going to get into the controversy of the game here. I'm going to explain it, and then I will give you, ample time to respond.
Just to interject really, really quickly. So the Bills play this weekend the Steelers, then the Patriots, and then the Bills. They play the Steelers, Patriots, then Jets. So, yes, okay. I mean, Steelers is a contest. Jets, I don't really assume as much. And then the Patriots is going to be possibly for the AFC East.
No, not to get off topic. You see, like, NFL trying to hype up the Jets-Ravens game tonight, like primetime Thursday Night Football, like who cares?
I want to quickly do a minute of research. If you want to explain what you were saying.
Yeah, and correct me where I'm wrong.
The controversy.
Or if I missed anything, because, I didn't watch the game. I saw these plays multiple times on social media and the internet and everything. So, did they both happen in the fourth quarter?
I believe so. Yes,
the fumble was in the
fumble
quarter.
Might have been in the third quarter, but I believe it was
okay. Well, it doesn't
maybe
matter.
It was the very. Late, it was late, either the very end or the very beginning of the fourth.
Late in the game, a great defensive play where I don't know who knocked the ball out, but
it was Devin McCourty.
Devin McCourty knocks the ball out of Travis Kelce's hands. He's clearly had possession. He took a couple of steps.
He's not down.
Not down. The ball is literally punched out. Recovered by the Patriots for what should have been a touchdown, because there was open field ahead of the guy who recovered it. And the play was blown for what reason now? I forget the reasoning.
It was believed that Travis Kelce was down by contact, so they blew the play dead.
Which
you're not supposed to do.
Patriots had, because if it ends up being a scoring or whatever, you can review it. That doesn't matter. So the Patriots have to use the challenge there. They do end up getting the ball, but where they should have had, you know, 7 points or 6 points there, rather.
Guaranteed.
Six guaranteed points. You just end up with decent field position, so that's a pretty harsh trade-off. And then you're talking late in the game. This is the last drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're down 23-17.
Or actually, this is the second-to-last Patriots drive, rather. I forget.
Second-to-last Patriots drive. You're down 20-13 at that point, right?
Yes.
Because they ended up kicking a field goal.
Hold on. I get it. 23-13, yes. 23-13, yep.
N'Keal Harry gets a pass on the sideline in the red zone, not the red zone, even inside the 5 yard line. Makes a dive for the pylon, just skirting that out of bounds line, and he is ruled out of bounds before he hit that pylon. And this, I think this is obviously the one I have the most problems with, because if you look at the replay, he is very clearly in bounds. It was the way this played was ruled that is the problem. Because say you take this and rule it just a touchdown, automatically you it's get reviewed. To go back and review it.
Exactly.
It's reviewable if it's a scoring play. All scoring plays are reviewable. You rule him out of bounds, that changes the dynamic because already blown one call in the game.
It's not an automatic review.
You've already blown one call in the game. The Patriots don't have their challenges left, so they just have to go based on discrepancy of the ref. And I get it, people make mistakes, whatever, but you know, if in a play this big, in a game this big, at this size, you know, you're at the top of the top in American football, the top league, you gotta find a way to get this right.
Yeah, and just quickly, I don't want to double back too much here. We were talking about the hype between the Jets and the Ravens game. The Jets are at plus 700 to win this game. That means if you bet $100, the odds are so sure that the Jets will lose the game that they will pay you $700 for 100 if they do. The Ravens are at minus 910. 910.
So, for those of you non-gambling people, you have to bet $950 to get paid $1,050 to make $100, basically. That's how sure they are that the Jets are going to win.
Yeah,
and that is your prime time matchup from NFL.
This goes into the whole like, are the Ravens are unbeatable? Blah blah blah. Which I hate. I hate saying. I even hate. I obviously don't hate it as much when they're like, oh, the Patriots are unbeatable, because there's no such thing as an unbeatable team. The 2011 Patriots, or no, 2007 Patriots were unbeatable. They, you know, they hadn't lost a game. They couldn't lose a game. And they get beat by Eli Manning, which once again, that's
all right,
one
all right,
thing I
can all right,
get
relax,
into.
Relax.
But all right, so relax. The ref in this game, you said
you have
3 minutes.
Now 3 minutes.
Let
to...
me set a timer on my phone so I make sure I make
it. I have it.
Points.
It'll go off. Okay. It'll go off.
All right, so
you
getting into it. The first thing we talked about is the Travis Kelce fumble. Nothing. I mean, you covered it very, very well. Where any sort of fumble like that, where there's a return involved, you're, as a ref, as I understand, at least from I've heard it explained on Twitter as well as the broadcast, you are not supposed to play blow those plays dead in case it results in a score and you decide that. Worst case scenario, you go back, you look at it, and he was down, no touchdown, you go on, no harm, no foul. Best case scenario, I guess, for the Patriots in this. They review it, they see that he was not down, you get the score, whatever. Luckily, the Patriots turned that drive into a score. I think they went for two, they didn't get it, so they only got six from that. The problem comes with the N'Keal Harry drive. You mentioned the second-to-last drive of the game. N'Keal Harry gets a pass on the sideline, and it's when he's breaking tackles, he starts running really close to the sideline, dives to the pylon, gets it. Like you said, the ruling on the field is he was out of bounds, so... it's not a scoring play, therefore not automatically reviewed. The problem with this is, because Belichick had already used two challenges, he lost one of his challenges, but won the fumble challenge. But since he didn't win both challenges, he is not allowed to use any more challenges for the rest of the game, which I think is dumb. I thought that,
I did not
if you
know.
At
That's
least won one
role.
Of your challenges, you get to use that challenge again kind of thing. But you don't get to. And... I mean, this play changes the course of the game. You look back at it, and it isn't even officially reviewed. So, I guess no one, I believe it's New York that they go to, no one says, hey, you might want to look at this again. No one says that, so they just go on with the game. Patriots can't challenge. Obviously, they're all talking about it because they want it to be challenged. Refs don't do anything about it. Patriots can't get the ball in the end zone now, and they have to kick a field goal. So, fast forward to the last drive of the game. Instead of just needing to kick a field goal on the last drive, they now need to score the ball, and they aren't able to. And because of that, I mean, this changes the course of the game. You look at N'Keal Harry gets in. Obviously, this is a big assumption that everything between that and the last drive of the game stays the same. But now the Patriots have to go for a score, whereas they could have just kicked a field goal to go to OT. I'm not saying they would have won an OT. I'm not saying they would have even gotten down the field to kick a field goal. I don't know. But... you look at it and it changes the course of the game so much that you have to figure out a way to make these calls better. I don't know what the rule changes need to be. I don't know what needs to be put in place. And because I don't have that recommendations, I don't want to say do this, do that, because I have nothing to back this up. But I think we need to find a way that plays like this. I don't know if it's just a poor ruling by the refs or what it is, but I don't usually talk about how, you know, issues with reffing, because it doesn't usually affect me. And that's a very selfish Boston sports thing. But it's just so frustrating watching your favorite team get robbed of, I'm not going to say a victory, but a chance at victory. All right, that's it.
All right, that's it.
Because of poor reffing. It was a very loud timer that scared me.
I agree with you. Yeah, sorry. I wanted to make sure everyone, you heard it. I agree with you. Something needs to be done, and I don't know if it's something as simple. I don't know how much this would change the game of football, but what if, you know, everything within, you know, the 10-yard line was reviewable? I don't know what that would bring. That would probably be too many things, but at least something where, you know, the people who have every camera angle in the building, aka the people in New York who make the final call or whatever it is, even if it's something as simple as them being like, hey, you screwed up. You might want to walk back on this one, instead of having to put out a league-wide statement as to why that ruling was made.
Exactly. And it's frustrating when you even see it's so blatantly obvious that, like, the announcers pick up on it. Where obviously, I believe this was Tony Romo and Jim Nantz calling the game. So people who know...
Oh, the dynamic duo we don't deserve, so people but we want.
Who obviously understand football at just such a level, such a high level, I should say. But when they can look at it one time, barely slowed down, and say, that's a wrong call, that's really frustrating when you think that the people who are paid, I don't even know how much, to make sure this game is as fair as possible, can't get the call right. And the last thing I want to say is it's really hard being a New England or just Boston fan in general and complaining about calls, because all people want to talk about is how many calls have gone in our team's favor. So it's a really hard conversation to have, because it's true for every team. Is you have calls where you really would have liked this call, but you had other calls go your way, does it balance out, whatever. But it's just frustrating, because it seems like we're at this stage where they've really integrated, you know, video review so much. And we talked about in the Bruins game where obviously they made the right call overturning the offsides, which led to a goal, but they're getting it right. At least they're getting it right. It sucks for our team because they take away a goal, but they're getting it right. Whereas this, I don't know what needs to be put in place, but they need to be getting these calls right. There's a lot of stuff with pass interference that I think isn't being called still. And that's a whole, obviously that's a whole nother mess that we don't need to get into. But it's just, we need to figure out something about these penalties, because it seems like this year it's been really, really noticeable that there's been a lot of really bad calls that have affected games.
Yeah, and I mean, I think from what I've seen from post-game press conferences and, you know, social media, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady couldn't say it better. On to Cincinnati. Just wipe this one from your mind. It's unfortunate. Like you said, we don't know that anything would have actually changed. It would just be nice to know that this doesn't happen in the future type of thing. So just, you know, put it behind you, move on to the next game. You got a division to win, and you got a number one seed you need to try and take back.
Yeah, so I think that we'll move on. Around the NFL, I don't want to get too much into this because we've talked about it a lot in the last couple of episodes, as well as the fact that, once again, it's that point in the season where a lot of things are shaping up right now, but I think it's going to be easier when we're in the same area. We can do like a full breakdown in a week or two when we're both back together, and it's really easy to talk about instead of just having to keep looking things up or, you know, this and that. So I think we'll leave like the full playoff breakdown to when it's pretty much almost set or a little bit more set in a couple of weeks. But other notable stuff, basically, the AFC South is crazy. Because I believe, I need to look at this really quick, it's looking like the Colts aren't going to make it. And it's between the Titans and the Texans, who are tied right now. The Titans riding a 4-game winning streak. The Texans sitting at 8-5 with basically getting close to blown out before scoring a couple of times in garbage time to make this thing close. But, I mean, it's anyone's game. We're at a point in the season where technically the Colts can still win this division.
Just to be thorough, the teams that have officially clinched playoffs are Ravens, Chiefs, Saints. I don't know how the 49ers haven't officially clinched. Who else is in there?
I think it's because the wild card teams in the NFC are both like 8 or 9 and 2.
And they're technically clinched.
And the Seahawks, I believe, lead their division right now because of their head-to-head.
Okay, so you're talking only three teams have officially clinched. I'm sure they'll change big time this weekend. If the 49ers win, I'm pretty sure they would automatically that would get them to clinch.
Well, I did misspeak. The 49ers are at the top of their division right now at 11-2, but the Seahawks are right behind them at 10-3. And if they tie in record, the Seahawks have the advantage right now.
Oh, so the 49ers might not clinch. Seahawks would have to lose. 49ers would have.
Yeah.
All right, well, we will bring you we'll obviously do a full playoff walkthrough and predictions, even though judging from our predictions we have here in the document, James, they're not great.
They aren't great. I'm looking at mine. Mine, I feel confident about my NFC one. It's not the exact order that I would have liked, but it's mine are interesting.
Mine are bad. Yeah. Anyway, that wraps up the sports portion, if I'm correct, and we will get into the life/other/mess portion of this podcast. And James is gonna tell you some stories.
All right. So really, I'll be honest. I haven't had too many exciting things happen. The only big thing that's happened is I did recently visit the Hockey Hall of Fame this past week. I went to Toronto for a couple of days, and I tweeted about this for like the 6 or 7 of you that follow me. If you are near Toronto and you have not gone to the Hockey Hall of Fame and you care at all about hockey, even if you just watch your favorite team, you know nothing about the league, go see it. It is by far one of the coolest places I've ever been in terms of sports. I mean, I spent hours in there, and they have just so many cool pieces of memorabilia, so many cool little artifacts, different things, and they have a bunch of really interactive stuff. They have like a goalie simulator, so you get pucks fired at you and you have to be a goalie. They have the same thing where you're in like a shootout, so there's a goalie in net on a simulator and you have to shoot pucks at the screen. So cool, so much fun. Incredible experience. So if you haven't done that, go do it. I'm not going to talk too much about it because it's nothing exciting, but that's basically what's been going on with me. Other than that, nothing really funny, exciting happening. We've just been grinding school, which is not that fun.
So finals week is fun, isn't it?
No, it's not. I'll flip it over to you, though, because you do have stuff to talk about.
Yeah, and this is weird. It's something I could have sworn I would have talked about, or at least told you already. And then when this came up before the show that I hadn't told you, I was like, all right, well, I got to tell. And it is my experience. Let's back up a little bit. To beat a dead horse, I am abroad in Europe right now for a semester. I had the... I had the pleasure, attending. Yep. Is that the word? I had the pleasure of attending Oktoberfest back in, you guessed it, October. And first off, did you know Oktoberfest actually is like, it's like September like 15th to like October 15th? Like half of it is in September.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either, and I don't know why. Regardless, I went in actual October because I'm a firm believer in names or something. I don't know.
Of course.
It was just a day trip, which was... Boy, it was a day. And went with two other people. We bused to Munich from Prague. That was about 4 hours, I guess.
Okay.
So left in the morning, got to Munich around 1:30, grabbed coffee because we knew it was going to be like a long night and everything. We didn't have a place to stay. Our bus was at 7 a.m. the next morning. So we were literally planning on staying out all night.
Wow.
So, you know, nowhere to rest our head or whatever. We were going to be up for the next, 15 hours or whatever it ended up being. Grabbed coffee, tried to find somewhere to store our backpacks because we brought like extra shirts, charger for our phone, water, food, that type of thing, which you can't bring any sort of bag really into Oktoberfest. Understandable, as it is probably one of the largest gatherings I would have to imagine in the world. There were so many people. We finally found a place to check our bags outside the park, I guess it took place in. And I would describe it as imagine the biggest state fair you've ever been to. Now, for James and I, that's not very big because We live in a small town. For some of you, that's going to be pretty big. And so kind of find a midpoint there. So a very large state fair, and then just multiply it by 10. So there, I was under the impression that you just went in, it was tense. Everyone just drank all day. It is a whole ordeal, James. Let me tell you, they have food, they have rides. There are so many people, and there are like different, they call them tents. They're really just buildings that you go into, and they just drink beer all day. Yeah. So my friends and I, we finally got into Oktoberfest probably around 3 o'clock. Walked there from the bus station, which wasn't too bad. We're looking, trying to get into some sort of building to have our first drink. And the thing about the bigger places is you need a reservation for, you need to reserve a table. You need to go online, reserve a table. I don't think it costs anything. It's just kind of a first come, first serve. And if it does cost something, I don't think it's a whole lot. But you need to reserve a table, so you can only get into these big places if you have a reservation. We finally found a small place that sat us out back. You know, you didn't need a reservation. How many times have I said reservation in the last?
A lot.
30 seconds? Yeah.
A lot of times.
Cool. You know, we didn't need any... Screwed up. Sat out back, finally ordered our first drinks. Another thing about Oktoberfest is you don't get to choose the beer. You don't get to choose the size. They bring you a liter of whatever beer is in that building, and you drink it. And you do pay an absurd amount of money for it. It's about 12 euro per liter, or so like, what they say,
15 American dollars.
Stein. Roughly. Yeah, it's probably like, nah, a little less, like 14, okay. 13 something.
All right.
But it's still pricey. It's a lot. Pricey nonetheless. We finally have our first drink. You know, we're just talking. We're there for probably half an hour, hour. We finish our drink, and we are pretty much immediately kicked out of those spots because, you know, people that are going to order actual, you know, pay money to order more drinks are coming in. So we have to stand at, like, the standing bar area there. We run into some, you know, start chatting with some other random people. Turns out they were from Prague. They were, like, studying in Prague as well, so that was cool. We finally moved on from that place, walked around. I think we went on like some rides, like some little rides or something, got some food. It's probably around like 5 or 6 o'clock at this point. And we're like, all right, we're going to try to like get into one of the bigger buildings. It's going to be popping in there, whatever. So we wait outside in this like line that's formed by one of the doors. We probably waited for half an hour. And honestly, I don't know why we stood there, because it was very clear no one was going into the building. The doors never opened in the time we were there. No one came out. No one went in. Like, there wasn't even someone outside the door, like,
Letting people
like
out.
Like, guarding it, if you will, or, like, yeah, like, security or anything. God. So we were like, finally, all right, like, screw this. Walked around some more. Starting to get dark out. We end up outside, out front one of the bigger buildings. And we're planning on trying the same thing, just kind of wait and see what happens when one of, like, the servers comes over. He's like, hey, I got a table for you guys. You guys want some beers? So we ended up sitting outside at a table. Again, still not in the building, but we're like, all right, this is fine. You know, we're right here. We'll be able to see if they're letting people in, whatever. You know, drink some more, order some food. The pretzels are like a really big thing there. They have these huge pretzels that you can order. So my friends had gotten those. And then eventually my friend, the one girl I was with got up. She was like, all right, guys, got to run to the bathroom. I'll be right back. She comes back a couple minutes later. She's like, all right, guys, come with me. So we go around the side of this building, one of the bigger ones, and I don't know what she said to like the security guard or whatever, but we get to go upstairs. Ooh. So we're not in the building yet, but we're in a more exclusive area than like out front. So we're, okay, you know, we're working our way up in the world.
Oh yeah. We're getting there.
Meet up with some more people. There was like a group kind of, how do I describe it? It is a group that's like based in Prague, and they do like trips to places, and they just happen to be Oktoberfest. I think we met up with some people who were on that trip that we kind of knew, talked to them briefly, and they were like, all right, we're going to like go talk to the front guy, see if he'll finally let us in, whatever. Again, timeline, we're probably about 8 or 9 p.m. here now. I don't really know for sure. And we go to the front. We have the girl approach the guard, obviously. That's the go-to strategy. If you've ever gone to a frat party or literally a bar or anything, you have the girl go up. And I don't even think she got a full sentence out before the guy shook his head and walked away.
Not much.
So we're sat there out front and like, all right, what do we do now? And in a moment that I can't really be super clear on because I'm still not sure what happened.
Oh, boy.
Just because, one, it happened so quick. I had, you know, I had been drinking during the day. I wasn't, like, gone or anything, but, you know, contribute to some fuzzy details.
Some confusion.
Some definite confusion. Because next thing I know, door opens to the front of the building, and people are just, and we're inside, basically. Like, people rushed in, and we just followed.
Okay. So definitely, you just went with the crowd, just in.
Went with the crowd. Definitely not where we were supposed to
no,
be.
No, not at all. I can tell you that. Off. Definitely not at all.
The guy told us off literally 30 seconds before this happened. And I'm telling you, it was 1 second we were outside, the next second we were inside the building.
Oh, okay. I got you. I got
you.
So
it happened so quick. And we were like, we just kind of like looked at each other. We were like, we did it.
All right.
So it's, like I said, 8 or 9 p.m. at this point. And you know, the reservations that you have to make for these tables, they start at like 9 a.m. in the morning. That's when Oktoberfest starts. Sitting at the tables anymore. Everyone is on top of the tables.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so, and we're talking, this is a big building. There must be 1,000, 2,000 people in here. I don't know. I can show you a video in person when I get back. But we're like, all right, literally a server came by, was like, here, take these. We kind of just wandered around into the middle of the building until someone like pulled us up on some tables, and they had like a band in the middle, so everyone's just dancing, singing along. It was like, songs. It was like American songs too, which was cool. And then, you know, some like what I'm sure like German like bar songs or Oktoberfest songs or whatever. I don't know. I didn't understand them. And this just goes on until like, and this was probably the most surprising thing. I think like 11 p.m. Everyone was out. Like, they kicked. It was like you flipped a switch. The music stopped, and everyone was told to leave.
Everyone got out, yeah.
Yeah, which I found odd because I just figured it's one of those things that, like, went all night type of thing.
Yeah.
And then you just do it again the next day. But nope, 11 p.m., we were out of there. And then, I mean, that was pretty much the most exciting part was Oktoberfest. But, you know, we're still 8 hours away from having to catch our bus. So, you know, we go out, regroup, kind of, we lost each other in the you know, the hecticness, I guess, if you will. I don't think.
The rush.
Yeah, got our bags. We ended up at some pizza place at, like, must have been 12 now, maybe 12:30. Got some very good pizza. And then we literally walked around, we found a club, stayed there till 5:30 in the morning. Jeez. Not even, like, dancing or anything. I think by 3, we were all pretty much, like, out of steam. We were like, okay, this is stupid. Thank God they had, like, couches. We just chilled on these couches for, like, a couple hours. Like, wow. People, not even, like, on the dance floor. We were, like, the losers sitting off the side. But we didn't even care. Like, it'd been such a long day. And we're just chilling on the couches. 5:30 rolls around. We're like, all right, we gotta, you know, make our way. It was, like, 45-minute walk back to the bus station. We're just, like, we'll go back to the bus station, like, try to grab some coffee, grab some food, something. We walk back, bus station around like 6:30, 6:45. We catch that 7 a.m. bus and off we were back to Prague. So I think in total, we were only in Munich for, let's see, 1 p.m. to 7 a.m. is like 19 hours? No, that's not right.
No, because 1 p.m.
No, 19 hours. 19 hours.
Hold on.
1 p.m. to 1 a.m. is 12. 1 a.m. to 6, yep, or 18 hours, I guess. Whatever, okay. Math's hard, all right?
Yeah, we're not great at math on this show. That is going to do it for this episode of the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast. Thank you guys all so much for listening. We will see you all again, hopefully, next week. I think we figured out that we do have time to record next week, and then the week after that, I need to look at a calendar here because I might be wrong. The week after
you're absolutely right. We will be in the flesh
and blood. Is the week of Christmas, and the holidays.
Good save.
Hanukkah and Kwanzaa as well. I'm looking on the calendar. I'm trying to incorporate.
Hit them all.
Anyways, it's a week of like the main December holidays. And we will be in town, in the same room, in the building, recording podcasts, doing whatever stupid stuff it is that we do. And you can bet that there's going to be, hopefully I speak for us both here, a little bit more content than just the podcast coming out from roughly that time. Obviously, the family aspect of the holidays comes first, so we're going to do a lot of that. But I do think we'll take some time to like just get some other stuff to have for you guys, because the way I look at it, I want to just as like almost an appreciation to the people who have stuck with this or people who have come in during this time where obviously our content hasn't been the best, and that's not because we don't want it to be. It's just a matter of circumstance at this point that we've talked about.
You get kind of thing. We're just making it work. But yeah, bring you guys some extra stuff.
And because of that,
we are both very excited about. We literally had a 30-minute discussion before we started recording.
Yeah,
plans and stuff, and just like inspiration, sort of thing.
So, anyways, make sure to follow us. First of all, this podcast primarily on whatever platform you listen to your podcast. To make sure to give it a rating, leave it a review, let us know what you like about it, what you don't like about it. Tweet us at Brady Bros Nick for you, I believe, and at James_B_Boston for me.
Look at you, first try,
Instagram,
baby.
Instagram at Brady Bros Boston on YouTube. I would definitely subscribe to that YouTube channel at Brady Bros Boston. I think that's all of the social medias we have. But just once again,
we're now on TikTok. Actually,
no, we're not a TikTok channel. But anyways,
give it time, guys, we always
say just thank you so much for just supporting this show, sticking with us, hopefully coming along for the ride, keeping you up to date with Boston sports, and just supporting this while we've gone through obviously probably the toughest like couple of months of getting this podcast up. It's been difficult, but we've made it work the best we can, and obviously it's gonna go up from here. Like I think this is hopefully like, I don't know, just one of the lower points.
Let's
in terms of quality and consistency.
At rock bottom, you can only go up.
I don't want to say it's rock bottom because we've had good podcasts, but I think it's, in terms of at least the quality and quantity of it, I think we both know we can do a lot better, and we are striving to do that moving forward.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you guys again so much for listening, and I'm looking forward to actually recording the same room as you, James. Until next time, guys. See ya!